Hi, guys. Welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one-stop for news, information, and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host, TechTarget. This is episode 41. My name is Dave Linthicum, Cloud Computing SME, author, speaker, B-List geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners. And joining me is my special guest, Mike Lingo, who's the CTO of Astandia. Did I say Astandia correctly?
Astadia.
I'm sorry. Before his appointment with CTO, Mike was Senior Vice President of Global Service Delivery for Astadia, leading spectrum of global delivery activities. Prior to Astadia, he held management positions at Infony, Lucent, Cendant, and Wyndham. Boy, no, there's no normal spellings these days, is there?
Yeah, that's probably absolutely the case, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for the opportunity, David. Looking forward to it.
So fill us in. What are you working on these days at your current company?
So as the CTO of a service provider, Astadia, we've been a cloud computing services company for over a decade now, with a focus really on building out the customer journey and leading cloud transformation projects for our customers. What's really been, I think, part and parcel of our customers' interests over the last year or so has been a refined focus on customer journey. And what that means to them is understanding how their customers perceive, understand, and value their products or services, and how they can orient their team around their customers' perspectives more than they have historically. And so it's really a combination of technology, strategy, and business process that they're looking for leaders to help them implement and create value from these days. So it's been a pretty exciting sort of uptake of cloud solutions over the last few years, as we've seen it become not just accepted by IT, but very mainstream and not as disruptive as it was 4 or 5 years ago, but the central value creation innovation engine that our customers are using.
So where are you guys physically located?
We're physically located in, our headquarters is in Jacksonville, Florida, with offices in London and Delhi as well. So we've got a global footprint for our team of about 800 folks around the world.
All right. And website?
www.astadia.com.
There you go. All right, check these guys out. So anyway, new webinars coming up. Learn how to deliver high-quality software better, faster, and cheaper in our DevOps series with Mike Cavas. Visit a webinar section in CloudTP for this presentation and more. So the topics, the big one this week, of course, the release of Docker 1.0. And you would have thought that it, you know, was in essence, you know, kind of the beginning of the universe in many definitions. And right. I blogged about it this week and put some perspectives up there. But in essence, what happened is Docker 1.0 came out, and the major enhancements include production ready state. They can now directly connect to the host network interface rather than using the internal bridging required for earlier versions. Linked Docker containers can find each other by host name with host files modified to reflect the current host. You can read the stuff out there, but they had DockerCon this week, and so everybody is just kind of getting behind this technology. And we had their CTO on the podcast, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he did a great job kind of explaining the technology. But what's your take on this?
Well, I think that, you know, I spent some time at a really interesting CIO summit in Chicago about 6 or 8 weeks ago. And, you know, the thing that is top of mind for CIOs right now is looking at products that create value. Whether it's infrastructure or other elements of technology, they want something that their spend creates value for the organization, doesn't just keep the lights on, isn't simply kind of maintaining the status quo. And when you look at products like that, your ability to create value for your spend is what drives them. And I think that's what people ascribe to tools like that. There's definitely, you know, I mean, I think, look, you and I have been in this industry long enough to have that sensation of back to the future, or, you know, starting from square one in a lot of ways. But that's what the best product companies have done. They've built their products from the ground up, for the cloud with the cloud in mind and using the modern development paradigms, whether it's open source, whether it's a stack that's supported by a community and not necessarily one single vendor that's less proprietary and more open. And I think, you know, when CIOs look at technology, they're looking for value and they're looking for the products that can help them change the culture of IT as well. And so, you know, what I mean when I say that is that, you know, the IT landscape in terms of employees, resources, training, et cetera, is changing rapidly, right? And has been over the last decade. We're seeing, you know, the fundamental shift of, you know, recent grads and recent hires that have a real different perspective on the things I just mentioned versus folks that have been in the industry for 20, 30 years. That shift, that cultural shift, that transition means that IT has to have a really different face, and they need different technologies and different solutions that can stitch together the same kind of enterprise governance they need, but with a lot more value upside and at a price point that just is very different. And I think that's what that represents to me.
Right. Just kind of looking at the announcement more, link Docker containers can find it. Well, you talked about that. Also, Docker plays nice with SE Linux, supports greater monitoring, offers timestamp logs for each container, and supports registry mirrors with multiple endpoints, which improves redundancy and reliability. Other features include substantially more relevant across multiple use cases and production scenarios, of course, because Docker is people are leveraging it to in essence solve real business problems today. Plus, it costs you nothing to try. It's an open source product, which is available under the Apache 2.0 open source license. So what was really kind of clear to me this week is that a lot of the people who are looking at Docker are comparing it to virtual machines. And the containers, basically containers have been around for a long time. And mm-hmm. virtualization has also been around for a long time. I've actually used both, you know, in my 20s, and I'm pretty old right now. So what are, you know, ultimately virtualization has to have typically a copy of the operating system that's bound into the virtual machine. And, you know, when you make applications and workloads portable, all these very heavy duty, very big things need to move across from cloud to cloud. And if we're talking about portability, Docker is much more lightweight. Docker is, I guess, a bit more of an elegant architecture. It doesn't seem to be as complex. There's fewer boxes when you see, you know, kind of the way they depict the architectural framework. So any downsides here in leveraging Docker over virtualization? Because I haven't seen any or heard anything, and I can't seem to figure out if I would ever want to leverage virtualization if technology like Docker is around.
Yeah, I think the one thing that resonates with me that you mentioned is the simplicity story. And I think that, you know, having spent the last 25 years in a combination of software companies, services companies, and within IT organizations, you know, the challenge around bloatware and vendor products that aren't built from the ground up to have a simple, elegant design that focuses on the pure function of what they're designed for, you know, creates a bigger challenge. And the opportunity that the simplicity gives you is to focus on the actual problem you're trying to solve and not necessarily the, you know, the nuances of a complexity of either configuration, deployment, or management that really has troubled so many software implementations, you know, since the advent of, I guess, probably really many, many, many computers. I mean, you know, we're going back to square one in many ways as it relates to the ability to host and virtualize in a more simplistic and constrained environment to a certain degree. But I think that gives the designer and the architect a lot more freedom to focus on the stuff that actually is going to make their stuff work properly. And that is a big human connection that a lot of software products can miss in the bells and whistles feature set.
Yeah, and we have a lot of interest in the industry as well. Google just announced their Docker stuff and actually had some use cases within their App Engine kind of environment as well as GCE. IBM's all over this. You know, Red Hat's been all over this since their conference a couple of months back, and I did a talk there, and it was Docker all the time. everywhere there. So everybody seems to be adopting this as something that's very innovative and really kind of a much better idea in terms of the way in which we're doing application and workload distribution now. And I think that this momentum is going to continue, and we'll see lots of startups that are basically built around the Docker stuff besides Docker, which is a startup promoting the open standard. Lots of bigger guys kind of moving into the space, and lots of momentum occurring back around the use of Docker. So this kind of changes the game a bit, because if people are dependent on virtualization for workload portability, workload management, the ability to leverage, you know, very heavy duty and proprietary kind of abstraction layers for application portability, Docker seems like a much better approach. And everybody starts moving in those directions. All the folks have been moving off in these very proprietary and very heavyweight directions are going to be disrupted. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. That's exactly how I see it as well. And I think that, you know, look, that's what we love about the power of software innovation, right? And that's I think the allure for a lot of potential customers and users of this solution.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm a big fan of Docker, and I really appreciate the movement afoot that's going on right now, and it's nice to see, you know, some innovation in the space where I think we needed to pay more attention to, and the ability to kind of create very portable and very lightweight containers and move them among different clouds. Obviously, it's going to go through some maturity over time, support different operating systems, different language bindings, all these sorts of things. But it seems like we're heading off in a simpler direction, which is typically going to be successful. We're heading off in something where we're not trying to, in essence, kind of overload the thing with technology. And it seems to be kind of working around the various technology providers and cloud provider interests toward the interests of the people that are consume this damn technology. Just last word on this. Do you think that's correct?
Yeah, I think that really portrays the current state of how people think of it and what they want to get, what they want to accomplish from a service provider that delivers those features. I mean, it's in some ways back to basics, but with an innovation focus on the user, on their user experience. And I think that's, you know, what you always kind of hope and pray against is just kind of a fracturing of that simplicity as things become more commercial, proprietary, et cetera. That's the classic dilemma that every software company has that looks at an open standard and tries to, enhance, add, componentize, build onto it in a way that creates value add for their customers. So that's always an exciting trail to see, but I think it's a very promising story, and one that that has, like you said, a lot of energy and excitement around it, which is positive.
Yeah, and you can check out my perspective on Docker in my InfraWorld blog posted today, Friday the 13th, believe it or not, and also doing some deep analysis on this over the weekend for GigaOm Pro in terms of where this stuff is looking to go, and also the threats, opportunities, and weaknesses of the technology going forward. And it's going to be interesting to see the way this matures. It's very exciting stuff. So next news, IBM calls in the cavalry for OpenStack Cloud Confederation. Hewlett-Packard will rely on a network of service provider and data center providers to give its Helion network scale to complete with massive cloud powers. I wouldn't consider this good news. We're at HP right now. So instead of building their own stuff and innovating around where they're looking to go, they're in essence going off and, you know, creating a confederation of partners to go off and execute on this stuff. And I'm not sure, based on their position in the market, this is necessarily something where I'm working at HP or leveraging HP technology that I'd ultimately want to hear. I mean, is this as kind of desperate as it sounds, or am I being overly negative?
No, I don't think you're being overly negative. I mean, I looked at this, and, you know, the thing that struck me is, you know, it seems like they've raised the flag of surrender around being a genuine competitor for, you know, Google, Amazon, or even Microsoft, you know, at a certain level, and said, you know, we're going to try and figure out how to aggregate billing and services in a way. And, you know, it just struck me that, you know, that's not what, if, like you said, if I were working there now, I would feel like the focus on innovation was going to be on how to how to make it easy for customers to stitch together a lot of different providers that aren't HP into one mechanism to, you know, manage and bill from. And that's not exactly super interesting to me if I'm on an engineering team at a company with the legacy of Hewlett Packard, right?
Yeah, where's the innovation? Where's the investment? You know, where's the you know, deep strategy as to where we're looking to go? If I'm going to depend on multiple providers, then those providers are going to have their own agenda in terms of where what their cloud strategy is, and supporting me is not necessarily going to be high on the list unless I get some traction. So I saw this as kind of a more of a stopgap measure. And by the way, we're looking at an article via Barb Darrell has been on this podcast a ton of times, entitled HP Calls in the Cavalry for OpenStack Cloud Confederation. This is on GigaOm.com. So, and I thought the way they summarized this was very apt. Although enterprises are slow moving to the cloud, the question is whether time is on HP's side. Azure, which Microsoft is pitching aggressively to its enterprise customers, and AWS, which has so big of a market share right now, are fully operational now. It's still not clear to me, you know, what Google is targeting, and this is according to Barb. You know, and ultimately HP isn't attempting to catch up, and I'm not sure that, you know, the likes of HP is going to catch up, you know, if they start pulling this kind of stuff in terms of announcing partnerships and things like that. You know, were I at HP, I would say we're completely restructuring our cloud provider stance. Base it on OpenStack, that's going to be fine. This is our public cloud provider system. This is a way to exist in our architectural stack. We are using partners to shore up key assets to this, to the point you made, you know, things that make sense, such as financial management, management monitoring, governance, things like that. However, the core stack and the core technology is ours. We're committed to this for the next 10 years, customers. We're going to invest so many billions of dollars to make this stuff work and go ahead and execute on that. And when you pop out, you got a stack that is unique and innovative in the space and not necessarily a hodgepodge of various companies and technologies you cobble together to really claim that you have a cloud stack solution that's as rich as AWS and Microsoft and IBM and the other competitors out there. Again, am I being too negative, too hard on HP?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's, I mean, when you look at companies that are, you know, desperate, for lack of a better word, to get their cloud act together, I mean, they only have to look at what Microsoft is doing to see someone who's committed an execution model and a program that is, you know, albeit some would say that may even be too little too late, but at least they're putting their foot on the gas and saying, you know what, we're going to figure this out for real. And, you know, I think you would want the same if you were a customer of HP as well. And I don't see this even approaching, you know, the right mentality of all in. It's, you know, it smacks of someone who desperately needed to get a press release and a story out because the real story, whatever it might be, isn't ready for prime time. And, you know, like you said, if there's a long-term vision there, sharing it early and often in a transparent way with your customers is, I mean, look at Tesla's announcement this week around how they're dealing with their IP, and you only need to look at that and see what kind of different era we may be living in. Transparency for your customer base and your partner community isn't a bad thing like it might have been 15 or 20 years ago. That kind of transparency would go a long way for HP to say, here's what the actual plan is. Here's what we're doing. This press release and the announcement is just a story that fluffs the news wires with the HP name. And for me, doesn't do more than that. So I don't think you're being unduly negative. I think that's just the normal inquiring minds perspective that we've all got to have when we see announcements like this.
All right, listen up, HP. Give Mike and I a call. Take us to lunch. We'll tell you how to run your company. All right. So last story, IBM beefs up its federal cloud efforts with new data centers, and not much of a story, but I think it's interesting. In fact, that they live next to Ashburn, Virginia, which used to be very rolling farmlands. Now it's very rolling data centers. It's Fiber Alley there. Yeah, so you have a big bundle coming up out of the ground. So everybody and their brother is building a data center out there. Raging Wires opening up this huge campus. I think it's, you know, 200, 300 acres. It's amazing. So anyway, two new IBM SoftLayer cloud data centers, one in Dallas and one in Ashburn, Virginia, will be added to IBM's roster later this year. And this is in essence to serve their federal market, which in the IBM space is pretty big. And the federal government, which kind of, you know, led us in the cloud back in 2008 and then kind of stopped, is now kind of getting back into it. So the SoftLayer cloud predecessors, IBM Smart Cloud for Government, got FedRAMP approval in November. And at this time, IBM, the company, was preparing SoftLayer Government Cloud to be available in early 2015. Everybody is actually building clouds for the government in the D.C. area, typically going to be in Ashburn, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of IBM's perspective on this. And ultimately, as the government starts moving, which we like to call the Global One, moves into the cloud computing space and even starts downsizing and starts removing some of their data centers or decommissioning some of their data centers, the importance on the government cloud centers is going to be huge. And of course, they have special security requirements, FISMA, and the ability to, you know, survive government audits, which are very, you know, very aggressive, and the ability to store and maintain top secret data or classified information, all these sorts of things. So Amazon's building a specialized data center and cloud for the government. Google is, Microsoft is, IBM is. Everybody's catering to the government this way. So is this a sign of the things to come? Are we going to have kind of like a commercial cloud sector and then a government cloud sector, and those are physically located in different buildings? Or are we ever going to be able to commingle this stuff, or so we're leveraging the same pool of resources?
Well, I think I think that it probably remains to be seen a little bit based on how, you know, how successful IBM can be against Amazon and others. You know, I think that the bottom line for me is that the uptake on a federal level is going to be more like what I thought it would be in 2010 or so, at the trajectory back then. But things stalled out, things changed, and I think that the pressure on cost containment and actual value for citizens is what's going to drive federal agencies to continue their push into cloud where it makes sense. The security requirements around most federal solutions aren't actually going to be that different for consumer technology in reality. You're going to have different statutory things, but in our experience, given a hodgepodge of, you know, federal, private, and state and local government work, I think that, you know, we've seen that all but the most extreme solutions have pretty common security requirements, which can be met by the public or consumer cloud companies, as you mentioned. But, you know, ultimately, there is going to be a percentage of federal agencies that need something that is so specialized, or can be sold to them as so specialized and unique and truly private and governed in a way that they feel comfy with, that that IBM can definitely make some headway there. I think it's going to depend a lot on whether Amazon can continue their press forward. If they take their eye off the ball or blink and give IBM a real shot to leverage this with the scale they have, then there's absolutely can be some fracturing of that market into a public consumer story and a private, more private federal story that creates that kind of change. And, you know, it really remains to be seen from my perspective. But I think this is a good announcement from IBM. I think they've got to, you know, they've got to find a way to differentiate themselves. And there is still enough FUD within, you know, the federal government around cloud and security, just by its nature of it being cloud, that they can leverage and take advantage of. So, you know, I would say that, you know, they're just kind of taking the low-hanging fruit of, you know, what their options are, and trying to use their massive scale and their execution capabilities and their relationships to try and take advantage of this. So I think it's a good decision from them.
Yeah, I think so. I think IBM is going to be all over the cloud space in the government like they are currently right now, and perhaps even more successful than some of the other larger cloud providers. So we may have, you know, them being more impactful and having a larger market share in the government space with, you know, AWS and Google and other providers kind of, you know, mixing up the rest of the market in terms of the commercial space. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and SOA Convergence, which you can find on Softback on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. Read my blog on InfoWorld as well as GigaOm Pro. And please don't forget to go to www.cloudtp.com for news, current news, links to this podcast, and ways to contact us directly. Twitter, I'm always at David Linthicum, LINTHICUM. And Mike is at Mike Lingo, MikeLingo. Make sure to follow him, check out his content, and go check out his company. Also, please make sure to support our host, TechTarget. Make sure to read my content there, as well as some great research, reporting, and events. Please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next time, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back next week. You guys take good care. Thank you very much.